You're listening to The Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds.
And I'm David Hyde.
So, David, you talked to Dave Minert.
Yep, probably Seattle's most influential nightlife entrepreneur.
Yeah, we've had him on a lot, as you know, to talk about rule changes to nightlife around here. He's been really active on issues like having the bars stay open until later.
He's also got involved with politics. Dave Minert manages bands like Hey Marseille and the Lumineers. He's involved with the Five Point Cafe. He started Seattle's other big music festival, the Capitol Hill Block Party. And I was kind of surprised at this.
I grew up wanting to be a fundamentalist Christian preacher.
I'm kind of surprised at that, too. But people change.
Yeah, sometimes. Dave Minert has also been a driving political force for the last few decades, helping shape the culture and nightlife of the city. And one of the most shocking things he told me is that the police once instructed him not to promote black shows.
Black shows? What was that?
This was music with black people performing or black audiences, and this was the early 1990s.
That's amazing. That was not that long ago at all. I'm really surprised to hear there would be laws like that on the books.
Yeah. When he stopped by the station, I started out by asking Dave Minert about the first band he managed after moving here to Seattle.
A band called Chikung, the sound of a stamp or cash register. They were an anarchist, tribal, industrial kind of collective. If you were to mix crash worship with a throbbing gristle, that would probably be their influences.
How do you spell it?
T-C-H-K-U-N-G.
Chikung.
Yeah.
We're talking to Dave Minert about Seattle music and the Seattle nightlife scene and how it changed since the early 1990s and his role in all of that. What were their performances like?
Super interactive, very political. They were associated with some Earth First people and other kind of radical lefty groups. We did mock, you know, executions of political prisoners. I mean, all sorts of things. Fire. There's a lot of fire involved. Torches on stage.
Fill out your taxes any way you like, long as you don't pay your share. The fancy car.
They'd shut down Denny at one time and built a bonfire in the middle of Denny after a show at Rock Candy.
Just started a spontaneous riot?
Yeah, pretty much. Good-natured riot.
Give us the context for people that weren't around Seattle at that time. What was this moment like? 1992, the alt music scene. Obviously, it was the year after punk broke, sort of after Nirvana. But what was it like?
I mean, the underground scene was just heavier and darker than, you know, the more mainstream bands like Nirvana and Soundgarden, Pearl Jam. I mean, you had the Gits and Officer Down and you know, all sorts of bands. And then Chikung, which was pretty radical and put on pretty popular big shows. But it was dark. I mean, it was before the tech boom. It was before a lot of the development, before the yuppies moved in. It was still a blue-collar town.
And how did you get involved with this? How did you become Chikung's manager?
I was doing a spoken word performance night at a place called The Weathered Wall. And one of the guys, James, did some performances there. And he was in the band, and they needed help not getting ripped off by promoters, basically, and came to me and asked me to help them. And I thought that was a good idea.
Dave Minert is with us. He's a nightlife entrepreneur, and we're talking about how Seattle's music and nightlife scene has changed since the early 1990s and how he's become probably Seattle's most influential nightlife entrepreneur, nightlife advocate. What was Seattle leadership's perspective on bands like Chikung and this alt music scene at that time?
Well, on the whole alt music scene, they wanted to shut it down. I mean, we had Mark Sidrin as a city attorney, you know, the city council, the mayor, all kind of wanted to shut it down. So right about then, the police started using the teen dance ordinance, which was to shut down all ages dance clubs in the 80s against punk shows and hip hop. And that kind of what's initially spurred my political activism fighting that.
So unpack that a little bit. Tell us about this teen dance ordinance and how and why it started being enforced in the early 90s.
Well, I think in general, the kind of establishment political leaders are scared of youth culture. They don't understand it. And at the time in the early 90s, it was pro-gay. There was a lot of drugs, a lot of leftist political thought and action activism. And the establishment was scared of that. Even though there was good, you know, University of Washington Democrats, they didn't like the more radical elements of the left. And I think the music scene had embraced a lot of that. So they were trying to literally just shut it down. Teen dance ordinance was just something that said if you had anyone under 18 and there was dancing, you couldn't have anyone over 21, and you had to hire off-duty police officers and have a couple million dollars worth of insurance and had to be done by a certain time. And on, all sorts of requirements that basically made it impossible to do events.
So what was the big concern with all ages dancing in the 80s when it first passed?
Dancing leads to sin, I think. I don't know. You know, I think we're a fairly conservative town in some ways, or used to be more so, when it came to some social mores. And you know, originally it came out of this club called the Monastery, which was a gay teen dance club in the late 70s, early 80s, which was a really bad thing to be gay in the late 70s, especially if you were talking about teenagers and kids. There was a lot of fear around that. So.
And about corruption and dancing might
dancing leads to sin.
Dave Meinert's with us. We're talking about the Seattle music and nightlife scene in the early 90s and how it's changed over that time. So what drew you into political activism surrounding nightlife and nightclubs?
Well, it was really to change that law. A lot of people organized around it. You know, fortunately, we had some successful bands like Pearl Jam and Nirvana that got super involved in local politics. There was a group called Jam Pack that fought record labeling and then got involved in local politics because of the teen dance ordinance. And basically over a 10-year period, we got rid of that law, and then helped elect some people on the city council and the mayor, and the music scene just got political and liked it. And so.
And you were booking some bands at a place called Odd Fellows Hall back in
92,
that time.
Yeah, 92. I was booking.
What was happening there?
Odd Fellows. Well, it was a crazy little organization. The police wanted to shut that place down because it was all ages. We did raves and hip-hop and punk rock shows. So we got a lot of pressure from the city to close.
So despite this ordinance, you guys were just going ahead and putting on all-ages shows?
Yeah, well, the ordinance wasn't made to apply to live music, so it was being misapplied, as the police like to do, you know, subjectively enforce laws. And so they were doing that in this case. At one point, a lieutenant from the East Precinct told us that they'd leave us alone if we stopped doing black shows.
What did that mean?
No black shows. No shows with black people at it, I guess. We did a show right after that that was a traditional Ethiopian group. And so a lot of Ethiopians, it was all Ethiopians in the audience, and the police shut that show down. And it was an adult sit-down show, right? Total traditional old-school Ethiopian. But they saw
black people. There was no dancing.
There was no dancing, and they just saw black people, so they shut it down.
It gets shut down. What did you do?
We kicked everyone out and stopped the show and then complained, and there was a little bit of press on it at the time. But, you know, it's a very different scene. You couldn't do that now. It'd be a huge blow up. But back even as close to this time as the early 90s, it was just a very different culture here.
Did it get reported? I mean, that they had threatened you and told you to, you know, not do black shows?
I think there was a little bit of reporting, but at the time, not much. I mean, The Stranger was just getting going. So you had a pretty establishment news media in the Weekly and the Seattle Times and PI. So they weren't that interested in the story. And even when they did write about the teen dance ordinance, all that, it was from the aspect of, you know, people like me and other people working on the issue were trying to corrupt the youth of the city.
Dave Meinert is with us. He's a nightlife entrepreneur. We're talking about nightlife in Seattle and how it's changed since the early 90s, how the culture's changed, how the nightlife scene has changed. You also had another incident where the police threatened to put you in jail.
We did a benefit for Curse, which was fighting the changes at KCMU, and Mudhoney was playing, and they, you know, the show was sold out. I think there were 750 people there, and the police thought it was too many, and they saw people moshing, which they said is dancing, and they said, so people are dancing, it falls under the teen dance ordinance, we're going to shut the show down. And we fought back and said, we don't want to shut the show down. They surrounded the venue with riot police and said, you either got to shut the show down or we'll put you in jail. So I negotiated. I told them the band had another hour left to play and we'd cut it down to half an hour. And of course they had like 15 minutes left to play, but the police bought it. And so we finished out the show and it was okay. But
So when did the city reverse itself? How did things kind of gradually change and why did the city reverse itself, especially on this all-ages dance ordinance?
I think when Mark Sidran lost for mayor and Greg Nichols won, that was in, I think, 2000, 2001. You know, before that, Richard Conlin and Nick Licata and a little bit Peter Steinbrück really fought back and supported the music and nightlife community and kind of fought back against the rest of the city council. Margaret Pageler and Mark Sidran were kind of the leaders in going against us. But Nichols really came in and changed that and made a pretty monumental shift by getting rid of that law.
And so at that point, there was nothing to enforce. And I mean, right. What was the difference? And we're talking not until the 2000s did you have these big changes.
There was no real difference. I think it was just different leadership and people who weren't scared of kids. You know, Greg Nichols had kids and they were good kids. And, you know, he wasn't terrified of them like Margaret Pagler was of other kids. I don't know.
What difference did it make, though, in the music scene here?
Oh, well, I mean, I think it was huge. I think if... you know, after that time, you had huge bands come out of here like Death Cab for Cutie and Fleet Foxes. You had the Vera Project starting up and all ages shows coming, kids being more involved in shows and playing music. And I think it exploded the whole music scene here.
Dave Meinert is with us. We're talking about the music scene in Seattle and how it's changed and his role in that, in changing the politics surrounding music and nightclubs. You know, I can imagine some listeners are out there thinking to themselves, you know, all ages shows, even now, I'm concerned about that. I mean, what was your message to that kind of mindset during this time and I guess even now?
Well, I think, one, music is healthy and kids need something to do. Not all kids play sports. Yeah, I think if you were to go to the Vera Project or the Showbox or Numos and see an all-ages show, you wouldn't be scared of them. They're run very safely. Kids are pretty safe. It's not the 1960s. It's not so crazy. You know, there's professional security people at professional venues, and there's law enforcement working with nightclub owners to make sure things are safe. So,
how has your role changed as really, you know, almost becoming a part of the political establishment here?
Well, we won. So that... It was a big, weird place to be. I mean, back in 2000, we actually had meetings where we thought about it. We had conversations like, we won, now what? What do we do? We're not the outsiders. Like, our people that we like that favor nightlife are in office. So, you know, we helped start things like the Seattle Music Commission. We got someone, James Kevlis now runs the Office of Film and Music. We started things like that to help the city get through problems with nightlife and nightclubs. And, you know, I think we still play a role in electoral politics a little bit, like any interest group. So I don't know how much power we have, but I think we can influence some voters and raise some money for candidates.
That's Seattle nightlife entrepreneur Dave Meinert telling me about how the Seattle nightlife scene changed since he first moved here in the early 1990s. You're listening to The Record on KUOW, and I'm David Hyde with Ross Reynolds.